In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Then let's do this.
Okay.
Like Brutus. I still use that line a lot. We were talking about Strong Bad just the other day at gaming.
Oh.
I don't remember what made it happen, but it did. All right. Welcome, everybody, to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that voted for write-in candidate Dabney Coleman in every single office on the ballot.
Wayne, I thought it was going to be
no.
The other thing.
No.
What was it? You were going to do? Were you going to write in? Wait.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm thinking.
And then give
yeah, I don't remember. Dewey. Wasn't it?
Yeah. No, but I went for Dabney instead. Very close. Oh. Dabney Coleman.
See, I remembered.
I think he'd be all the things. anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 87.
Yes. 87. So welcome. And for those of you who have been listening for many, many weeks and still haven't figured out what the show is about, we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email. You, by which I mean the listeners and random passersby, email the hat with topics and questions. We draw them at random out of the hat because that's how the magic works. And then we talk about them until we're bored. That's the whole premise.
Well, the magic part really is that somehow the emails they send get transferred onto the little pieces of paper that we draw out.
Yes, magically, as though someone checked the email by hand and wrote down things on card and put them in the hat.
Because
but that's not what happened.
Us drawing it isn't magical. And technically the hat having an email address, I mean, a cat can have an email address.
Yeah.
The thing is, it answers its email in a way.
Well, it checks its email.
Checks its email, and it writes it on these cards. So then when we reach into the hat, and really we should expect to find absolutely nothing in there.
Yes, an empty hat.
But it's not empty.
Possibly, if there's a little magic, you know, a rabbit.
Yeah.
Possibly. But not emails.
But yeah, how come these emails? Or, well, magic. You know, what, I guess we, how do we really know they're emails, actually? How did we figure that out?
Way to just bust the whole premise of the show.
Crap!
Right off the bat.
Oh, well.
All right. Forget that happened. We'll edit that out later.
Yeah.
If we edit. Which we don't. Anyway, so welcome to episode 87. Yeah. How was your week, William?
It was good. Working on stuff. I feel like I should say something about what I've been working on because Mark pointed out, I mean, he heard me talk about how I had a part for
him.
But I've been kind of tight-lipped about what exactly this project is about.
I feel like you, I mean, explaining some is not, I still feel, and I don't exactly know why, I feel like you should minimize the details at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been thinking.
I feel like we should be saving it, but a very sketchy overview might not be untoward.
Well, now I have to figure out how to do that. Well, okay. It's the story is, well, maybe I could just kind of, you know, just say some elements of it, and maybe that would be enough. It's an alternate history. That's one element of it. It's kind of, man, what else can I say besides that without really talking about what the story's about?
It's something of a superhero tale, isn't it?
Kind of, a little bit. That's true. It's I have my own reasons for creating this alternate history and creating this particular character, but I hope that, you know, I hope that as I tell this story, you know, people can enjoy the story and some of the philosophical and somewhat political underpinnings are just sort of part of the story and not something that seems like the, you know, the goal of what I'm trying to do.
As with all creations of William, there are deep philosophical and political statements underneath.
Right, but I don't want that. I don't want that to be, and it's not going to be hidden or anything. I mean, it's going to be right out there. But I want people who are listening to it to feel like, you know, having these things apparent in the story, it's still part of the story and not
a manifesto.
Yeah, because that's not what it'll be.
And you're usually good at that. With the exception of one short story I have read of yours, you're usually pretty good at that.
So, but it's a pretty big project. I mean, I envision it being something that, like, several seasons worth of episodes, and probably 18-hour-long episodes per season. So, in this alternate history, maybe I can give some more details about that. The departure point of this alternate history occurs in 1831, and the action of the story is in 2031. But of course, it's a very different 2031 than we will actually experience. Although Tony is always quick to tell me, "Well, it hasn't happened yet, so maybe it will be like that." But no, of course,
don't even know.
Of course, it won't be. For example, all of the whole line of presidents is different. In fact, I'm pretty sure I figured out that in my alternate history, Davy Crockett was president.
Okay.
And there's a very important reason for that to have happened. Another big aspect of the alternate history is, I don't know if a lot of people know this, and maybe I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but the research I've done indicates that early on in the development of the automobile industry, of course, electric cars were the most popular cars for a very long time. And when Henry Ford was going to build fuel cars, and there was a reason, you know, the reason fuel cars are preferred over electric cars is because, you know, it's lighter to have a fuel tank, and liquid fuel can be more efficient and so on and so forth. But he didn't want to use fossil fuels because even back then people were talking about how we might run out and we don't want to rely on fossil fuels. And he thought that maybe they could develop a biofuel or something. So in my alternate history, fossil fuels indeed are, you know, sort of fall by the wayside because people decide it's too dirty and too whatever to use those. And so a very different economy, a very different philosophy of business and I guess life evolves, because when you think about it, if everything runs on fossil fuels, everyone has the sense that there's only so much of these fossil fuels. I mean, for one thing, only some people have access to them to begin with. But you also, again, since the very beginning, people have had this notion that you're going to run out. So you're constantly in this environment of scarcity. And so in my alternate reality, that never happens. And so people don't let their thinking get sort of caged by that notion. And so certain things are able to develop and transpire that weren't able to develop in our history. So there's a lot of things involved in building this alternate history. The alternate history also has a space exploration. There are already several settled planets. Part of the feel of the story is going to be hopefully a little bit like the early Buck Rogers stories, but quite a bit different, of course, updated and a lot of things in it that the Buck Rogers stories didn't have. And the character that I have envisioned for Mark, is a politician. He's a mayor, actually. And in my alternate reality, mayors are a lot more important than they are in our reality. So he's kind of a big deal. And there's also a main bad guy. But if, as you know, I like to kind of have some moral ambiguity, so my bad guy is going to hopefully... he'll be a bad guy, but there's going to be ways, hopefully, to make people at least understand his perspective if they don't sympathize with him. And I want Tony to play that guy.
Because that's how I am.
But the main...
evil, but kind of sympathetic.
But the main character is a woman who was born and lived part of her life in 1831 and has somehow ended up in 2031. And this presents all kinds of problems for her. So, those are some things I can offer about the story without giving too much away.
Are you hooked yet, people?
Yeah, I probably didn't tell a very good story that way, but I wanted to mention, you asked how my week was. One thing this week was I realized that this project is so big, sometimes I work on it and I kind of have to step away from it for a little while. As you know, I was working on another novel, but that's, I realized that that's going to be one of those things, like my third novel, which was you work on it for a little bit and then you kind of hit a wall and you have to totally quit for sometimes a month.
And so you drink heavily for a while.
No. You wake up one day and you feel like there might be something to say, and you go, and there is something to say. You work on it for a week and then you have to wait another month. It's one of those kind of things. So what do I do when I'm working on this bigger project and it's like, okay, I got to step away from this? I realized that I have an idea for a story that could also be done in a radio drama format, but it would be much shorter and much simpler, and it might be a good idea to go ahead and work on that and maybe try it out so the first time I go into this, I'm not doing this huge project.
We can learn a lot of lessons in production.
Yes.
From the shorter one. I like that idea.
So today I started, I mean, I'd already been doing some work on this story because it's a story that my goddaughter and I came up with, and so we've been kind of kicking it back and forth for several months now. And I just realized that it would make a great, it's a great opportunity to make a sort of a shorter radio drama and try it out. And so I started just going ahead and writing it today. That idea, not terribly original actually, but I think we might have a good fresh take on it. The story involves it involves grim fairy tales, and what we're doing is we're taking a handful of those tales and we're sort of connecting them together through a single character. Again, not an original idea, but
Into the Woods.
Yeah, well, Into the Woods, Once Upon a Time, you know, whatever. But the character we've picked to do this with is there's a grim tale called it's called various things, but in the collection of grim tales I have, she's called Mother Hola. Other places she's called Frau Holda, whatever. In the tale, a young woman who is worked to death by her mother is spinning yarn, you know, or thread, and she works so hard she starts to bleed and she gets blood on the spindle. She takes the spindle to a well to wash the blood off, and the spindle falls into the well. She goes back to her mother and tells her what happened, and her mother's a very unreasonable and hateful woman, and so she's very angry with her. So she goes back to the well and decides, well, I need to go into this well and get the spindle back. So she jumps in, but what ends up happening is she ends up in the other world where Holda is, and so she ends up working for Holda for a while, and various other things happen in the story. But we're taking Holda, that character Holda, and we're sort of elevating her status to things like, well, the fairy who comes in and crashes the party in Sleeping Beauty, that's her. There are various stories where princes are cursed to be animals, but they never say why they were cursed or who cursed them. Well, she's the person who cursed them. And we're weaving all these stories together into one narrative.
Isn't this basically what Ally McBeal was? I didn't watch the show.
I don't know.
But I feel like this is sort of how it went.
No. The hero of the story will be Briar Rose, which is Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
And it's going to start with her waking up and Holda's there, and she figures out who Holda is. And Holda sends her on a mission, a neighboring kingdom. The queen has gone mad, and Holda wants Briar Rose to find the heir to the kingdom who's missing. And if she can find the heir, maybe she can stop the war that the mad queen has started. And then if that happens, then maybe Holda can revive the rest of the castle, not just Briar Rose. So that starts her on her little quest, and a lot of those other grim stories weave in and out, but when I'm done with it, it should be maybe 2 hours worth of 2.5 hours worth of material that I can cut into smaller chunks and record little episodes, you know.
And Holda will be played by Jane Lynch.
don't know. I don't know who's going to play Olda, but it's also it's another one where it's going to have a fairly strong female cast because...
I still got people. I'm guessing the same people who agreed to do your other story that they don't know anything about would do this story that they don't know anything
well,
about.
Well, hopefully. But, of course, then there's going to be plenty of roles for men, too, because all of the cursed princes, they're animals, but they talk, so, you know. No, there's going to be a fox, a fish.
I have no idea what sound a fox makes.
And a frog. Are you auditioning now?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. But, I just have some indigestion.
But I might have the whole script for this done, I mean, relatively soon. It's probably going to be 120 pages, so it might take a while.
I've prepared a monologue for the frog prince, if you don't mind.
No, he talks.
This goes on for 5 minutes.
He talks.
Can there be a chicken prince? I'm really good at a chicken.
There's no chicken prince. There's no chicken prince in the story. There is a story about a rooster.
My elephant's hard to do.
No, there's definitely no elephants in Grimm, so.
That was not a good elephant, and now I'm dizzy.
That just sounds like you spitting.
That's basically what it is. I'm really good at the chicken note. You're making stuff up in this too. You can add in a chicken prince.
No, see what makes this project an easy, fun project to do and get my mind off of the bigger project is that I don't have to make stuff up. Stop it! I'm just taking stuff from Grimm. I'm letting Grimm do the work for me, and I'm just sort of weaving it together. That's an easy thing. It kind of lets my mind rest for a little bit, so that I can get back to something where I'm creating an entire world and an entire history, and I have to make sure I cover all my bases. That's hard work.
I am going to make an original radio drama called The Chicken Prince. So there.
Well, you know, I was listening
to... This is going
to
be like an hour and a half of...
and somehow it'll be a hit.
Yes. Because I got peeps.
But anyway, that's what I've been doing. Beep, what about your week?
Imitating chicken, mostly. Most of the week. Just standard crap. I'm still going to the gym. Every day. Working out. Going pretty well. Next week I go to the doctor for my usual every 3 months, so we'll see if the numbers say anything useful from my experience.
But okay, good.
I'm hoping stuff will go well.
Yeah, I hope so too. But Thanksgiving's coming.
Yeah.
Does that concern you?
In general, the fact that this is the first holiday season since I've had diabetes, I'm a little concerned, but I can work with it.
Yeah.
It's just paying attention. Same stuff. I mean, yeah, I'm not too worried about that. I am trying to figure out what I'm going to do for exercise on the days that I'm there. I mean, the first 2 days of the holiday are weekdays, so I should be doing some sort of exercise, and so I'm not sure what. Finished up the video game I was playing. Now I'm playing Assassin's Creed, not the new one that everybody sees the commercials for, the one before that. I'm playing it. That's pretty fun. I'd forgotten how much I enjoy that series, so that's been fun. Not too much else. Almost done with the book I'm reading. But yeah, nothing really has happened.
Didn't game?
We did game. That went kind of crazy. That was basically the whole session was a big involved negotiation with an evil guy.
Oh.
For the sake of saving the person who will help get them to the person that they will need to save.
Wow. It's getting complicated.
Yes, it really is. and they're in Prague now.
Oh. Are they not in the Never Never anymore?
They were, but they negotiated a deal, and they really didn't have enough leverage to negotiate the return of the prisoner and safe passage.
Oh.
So they basically got the prisoner back, got out of the house, and ran like hell to the nearest spot they could get out of the Never Never and just open a door to anywhere in the real world. And it turned out to be Prague.
It's always Prague.
It's always Prague. Because they have really great tax incentives for filming there. So, yeah. And the Czech union rates for like PAs and stuff, way lower than anywhere else.
Right.
So that's where they are now. So yeah, then they'll have to go back. And the super powerful artifact, of which they do not understand, they managed to not give it to the evil guy, but they did leave it in the hands of a guy they don't know too well, who's still in the Never Never waiting for them to come back and get it.
Oh.
So that could get awkward.
Yeah. But they rescued their person.
Yes. The person who's going to help them find the person they need to rescue.
Who is still in Never Never?
Yes.
Well, what about the person that had their mind messed with and stuff?
Still messed with. Still a problem. Getting a little bit worse.
Worse?
Yeah. At the moment, she does not remember her boyfriend.
Yeah, that's right. You were saying that.
And she keeps
time.
Pretending she remembers her boyfriend. But nobody, and especially her boyfriend, is fooled. So it's a little awkward. But the boyfriend had to get left behind anyway because he has work to do, so he's not there. It was really fun for me because of the way they were playing it. I honestly didn't know how it was going to play out, like, in the scene. In fact, I was pretty much resigned to a solution they had come up with that was just going to, like, wipe out the rest of the adventure. They basically would have wrapped up the whole story arc right that night.
Seriously?
And then they changed their mind. And then that didn't work well, and I was like, well, this is going to suck, and they're not going to save the person, but this is how they're going. And then at the last minute, somebody pulled it around and did what I had originally thought they would do, and then it was all better. But it was, yeah, so it was really fun for me not knowing how things were going to go, which is totally what I've been looking for in this game.
Which is why he married me.
Which is why I married her. For those of you who didn't hear it, the producer said, which is why he married me. And then I said, which is why I married her. Because it's always best to agree with the producer. All right, so that's it for me. Nothing too thrilling, but it was a fun week. All right. So, hat?
I think so.
Things with that? All right. Who's it from? Who's it from? Who's it from?
Mark.
Mark McKeeben.
Dear TMTH. In a fight to the death.
Wah!
Between the Avengers.
Yes.
And the X-Men.
Ooh.
Who wins? Mark McKeeben.
This is a terrible question.
It's the ones who have mind control powers, Mark!
No, don't get evil.
I'm not evil. I don't want mind control powers.
You did say that in the original thing. You said mind control.
I originally said flight. Then he said, you can't have flight. And so then I said,
I know,
mind reading.
But before
and I
we
threw
were
in
done,
mind control.
You added in mind control.
Right, but I don't, I, you know,
well, then you
here's
say,
the thing.
I never say things on this podcast I don't mean.
You know, you want to know one of the most, the things that offended me most in any movie, anytime, anywhere? It
not
was,
really,
it
but
was
you should
in
probably tell us
that
for the
it was in an X-Men
yeah.
movie.
Yes.
And it was where...
was it in First Class? I hated that
no,
movie.
No, no, no. You know, one of the ones that Patrick Stewart was in. Where he
was
talked
it in
about,
the third one? Because I hated that movie also.
I don't know. Where he talked about partitioning off what's-her-name's mind or whatever, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
My God, that's horrible. And I wasn't sure what the writers of the script, if they wanted us to think that was horrible or... And to be honest, I've always... not liked Professor X because here's this character that does these things and they find ways for him to do them in a way that you as the reader are supposed to think, oh, well, that was a good thing to do or it's heroic or whatever. And of course I find that objectionable just like everybody else does. But I don't...
Well,
but
perhaps you shouldn't have said it.
I know, I shouldn't have said it.
No, I think that's
a pox
thing
upon
movies.
Me for saying something that I didn't even really mean.
I think that's a thing in movies and TV and stuff like that. People, or the creators of such things, often take violation much more lightly if it's not rape, if it's not overt physical rape. Mm-hmm. Other forms of violation are frequently taken as not as big a deal somehow. and they still bother the hell out of
me. Well, me too.
But this is a crazy thing. No,
but that said, I did put the little thing in the blog about, you know, Craniac, and but all that's a joke. Yes. It's supposed to be funny.
Or evil. You know you're not funny. Why would you think people would get the joke?
That's right.
No, this is the thing that's been bugging me lately. I'm watching a show. Is that your right?
No, but that is pretty loud when it's on the
podcast,
isn't
it? Yes, it is. I'm watching a show on Disney XD, which is a different Disney channel, called Tron Uprising. It is a series. I'm going to say it's basically a series. It's a prequel to Tron Legacy.
Okay.
The movie. And I was watching, they had this multifaceted episode recently, and I happened to catch as I was going in that the TV rating on it is Y7 for fantasy violence. Which I understand, because they're all computer programs, and they're fighting with their little discs and stuff, but you know, it's all fantasy. Power Rangers, similar thing. Here's the deal. This show has in it killing. I mean, they are de-rezzed, but people go away and never come back.
Mm-hmm.
It has terrible, like, vengeance and betrayal stuff going on. It has attempted genocide.
Mm.
That's the whole plot for Legacy, is the ISO creatures that got made by the grid instead of by Flynn, and they decided to wipe them out. That's in here.
Mm.
And this last one had torture.
Mm.
And I'm like, really? Why seven? Don't get me wrong. Good show. I like it. But I'm like, why seven?
What else would it be besides why seven? Like, does the number go up or does the letter go up?
there's varying ones, but I'm like, but higher, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, this is... We got torture. We got genocide. Like, these are things. But certain things. And mind control be in there. Mind control can be used in a way that is incredibly violent and incredibly disturbing. And yet, there's never going to be a warning for that kind of thing. You might get mature themes, maybe. But that usually is, again, talking about sex.
Yeah. I always find it disturbing. Which, I suppose it's... that's the reason I think it's funny for me to talk about it, because, you know, that's the whole point. I'm about as far away from being that kind of person or doing that kind of thing as you can come up with, and then I talk about, you know, all this stuff. It's supposed to be funny. But like you said, I'm not funny, so why do I try?
We assume you're evil. So thanks for your question, Mark.
By the way, it seems to me that the X-Men would win.
No, see, first of all, this is a terrible question. Why? As I was saying in the beginning.
Why is it a terrible question?
Because we've got no set roster. The Avengers, and especially the X-Men, the membership of those has changed.
No, okay, that's true. Let's go with the movie rosters then.
Well, even in the movies, the X-Men changed fairly drastically.
Yeah, let's go with the very first X-Men.
Okay.
And
so who are our X-Men?
Xavier.
Cyclops.
Yeah.
Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Wolverine.
Yeah.
Rogue.
Rogue. Storm.
Storm.
I don't care about Rogue. She's not going to do anything.
Well, in the movies, you're right.
Let's stop there. We don't have to. Well, I suppose we could get, what, as Beast and Nightcrawler or something? Or
Beast shows up later. Nightcrawler shows up in the second one and then disappears.
Okay, we could stick with these and then just use the Avengers as they showed up in the movie.
Which is Thor, Captain America,
yeah.
Iron Man,
mm-hmm.
Hulk,
mm-hmm.
and the rest.
Okay, so
that's the perfect name for Hawkeye and Black Widow. They're the Professor and Marianne of the Avengers and the rest.
Okay, so
no, I think absolutely the Avengers kick their ass.
Why?
Well, you've got let's take the X-Men side first.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. First of all, how are you going to stop Xavier from controlling everybody's minds?
Everybody gets one of those helmets.
No. They don't have one of those helmets. That's not fair.
Okay.
Because if you do that, then you can say, well, you know, something on their side is going to make them immune
to
something.
Okay, but if you're going to do one-trick pony, then Xavier versus anybody ever, Xavier wins.
Exactly. That's what's so crazy about Xavier's character. It's like, no, you can't beat Xavier's character.
Unless you're Juggernaut or Magneto.
Right, but...
because they have things on their heads.
On their heads, that's right.
Magneto, they kind of made it up. I don't even think that's canon. Juggernaut, that's his whole thing.
Okay, well, take... if we take Xavier out, then...
okay.
Hold on, let me think about that one.
Okay, you crunch the numbers again.
No, then, see, I think the Avengers are pretty much...
yes, because here's the deal.
With one, you've got Hulk, who's...
okay.
Nobody can beat Hulk if you're not...
we got Beast, who's like a weak Hulk. We don't even have Beast, though.
No.
We've got Cyclops, who is awesome in that he basically has a laser gun.
Yeah, yeah.
That happens to be in his eyes.
That's not gonna
We've
work.
Got Jean Grey. Eh.
Well, no, yeah, Jean, okay.
But I don't
but,
know.
But Jean,
she's, yeah.
Technically, she could do similar things to
so,
Xavier.
But not very well, and then
okay,
she dies.
Whatever.
Confusing. Spoiler alert. Wolverine, who, let's be honest, heals well and has knives. And Storm. Storm can actually do some shit.
Yeah, right.
That's it. On the Avengers side, we have the Hulk.
Yeah.
Who is like a stronger version of Wolverine without knives. But he cannot die, and he will punch you face.
And he could probably end a Wolverine and one other person.
He could just eat them. We have a god. Just saying, we have a god.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have Captain America, who basically is as powerful as any of the X-Men.
Basically.
We have Iron Man, who... there's not really a comparison.
No.
But he has all the stuff.
Basically.
I mean, all the stuff.
Sure.
Any stuff, he's got it. He could build
any stuff he's got.
He could build shit onto his suit that has the same powers as Wolverine and Cyclops and possibly Jean Grey. And then just for fun, we have the rest.
Yeah, right.
Just for fun, we have other two badasses who are pretty much mid-grade X-Men themselves.
I guess.
Don't have mutant powers, but, you know, in combat abilities, they're better than Rogue, is what I'm saying. I think the Avengers win. I've always thought the Avengers are a weird team and way overpowered. Somebody needs to nerf the Avengers.
Well.
They are way overpowered. They are ruining game balance.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look at the Justice League. They have the same problem. And that's why...
this is the beginning of their problem.
Whenever you have a Justice League story... the enemy has to be this insanely weird, multi-dimensional alien life form thing that it would necessitate having all of them work together to fight it. Otherwise, you don't have anything.
Justice League going after purse snatchers and stuff. That would be awesome.
You know, it's the Justice League comics can be really bizarre
in
art and in story and everything else because they can't think of anything for all of them to go up against.
Or the antagonist has to be magic because, you know... those are two weaknesses that Superman has, kryptonite and magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you know why magic is one of his weaknesses?
I suppose to make it interesting.
Because they did a video game that put the superheroes against, like, the Mortal Kombat guys or whatever, and they needed a reason why you could actually beat Superman in a fight.
I see. Yeah, the Justice League has the same problem. So Avengers, you're right. I mean, but that's just how it's going to be. That's the way.
The handy capable psychic, or the Justice League, and then after that, it's just X-Men is just like the best gym class you've ever coached. On a superhero scale.
Nah, that's right. I think you're right about that.
Until we start getting all Phoenix-y or, you know.
Well, and when you think about it...
there's a whole storyline where Storm becomes an Asgardian. They've tied her in. So then we could get interesting.
But I don't know much about Wolverine. In the films, he heals. The skeleton makes him pretty much impossible to, you know, wound critically.
And it gives him essentially lethal hand-to-hand damage.
Okay. So,
the weight of
but...
it. That's pretty accurate to the thing.
Okay,
his mutant power is a healing ability.
Okay, but
and because of that,
right.
They were like, he seems like a really good candidate to dip his skeleton in metal.
Okay, but
Canadians are assholes.
What it really means, though, is that
Canada did that too.
Yeah. But
Canadians are motherfuckers.
Okay, listen. What it really means is his superpower is someone can beat the crap out of him. I mean,
yeah, he's the Rocky Balboa of X-Men.
But if,
and he has knives.
If the enemy
he can't disarm.
If the enemy he's up against is not going to be particularly susceptible to a maybe a little better than average fighter and strong guy with knives, he's just the guy that will keep getting back up.
Yes,
and that doesn't make
him
a
distraction. Right. I was gonna fight the rest of them, but I was having too much fun beating the shit out of this guy. And then...
So I mean, what is there really?
But
he's the best they got.
The
probably.
Bigger issue is I can't decide now if this episode is going to be called The Chicken Prince or Canadians Are Assholes. I hate when that happens.
Anyway, Mark, thanks for your question.
No, and oh my god, so Cyclops, the worst hero ever, pretty much. Matt Myra, the comedian, also featured on The Nerdist and on Four Eyes and Beard, does a bit that I saw when I saw him live here. It's hilarious about Cyclops and how he hates Cyclops, because here's the thing. Cyclops shoots laser beams out of his eyes. Like, out of his eyeballs. And sometimes he misses. He expands the joke a little bit, but that's basically it. There's no he should never miss. The aiming, if he can see it, like he's looking, like yeah. Yeah, and I used to hate Cyclops, but that pretty much drove it home. I was like, he's useless.
Yeah, right. No, I agree. Without Xavier or a competent Jean Grey,
I somehow feel like we're being really sexist. I know we're not. We're just bashing on Jean Grey, but I feel like somehow we're being sexist.
No, that's
like if
that's
she was just... bald and had a penis, we'd think she was better.
No.
But even then, she'd still be able to walk, and nobody likes that.
Everybody knows that she's like.
Well, and again, if we're going off the movies, she's extra sucky. Like,
oh, okay. Well, see, I don't know anything about just the movies. That's all I know.
Yeah, no, I mean, she eventually become Phoenix and all that cool shit, but that's later. So yeah. All right. Thanks for your question, Mark.
Yep. Thank you. But if the Avengers and the X-Men combined were up against Craniac,
they're hosed.
Craniac would totally dominate
Absolutely.
From cranium.
Unless they got tinfoil hats.
Yeah.
Don't tell them. It's a secret. Ah! This one's from Kia. Guess which one?
Okay, well, B.
Yes. Kia B.
Yes! I'm 2 for 2.
All right. What? Because you guessed Mark when?
No,
you
last
read
time.
It?
Last time you asked which key it was, okay. I guessed it right.
I love that you're keeping track through the episode.
No, I have to.
Dear, the magical talking hat. Glasses, contacts, or LASIK?
Okay. Well, for me personally, LASIK. No way. There's no way I could do it. And I tried to do contact lenses. Because I've had glasses since I was like 10 or something. And I tried to do contact lenses, but I hated those too. So my prescription is weak enough that, I mean, even today, if someone tries my glasses on who has normal vision, they often ask me if I have any prescription at all because they can't even tell. The only reason I have to wear glasses is because even though my vision is only slightly bad, I'll get pretty bad headaches without wearing glasses. So, but I went for years without wearing them at all because I wasn't getting headaches and I could see just fine. So when I got contact lenses, because I thought, you know, because I like it if everyone else, I don't really like having glasses on my face and I couldn't stand them. So, I stopped wearing glasses for many, many, many years. I think I even when I worked at Applied for a long time, I didn't wear them.
I didn't know you as a person wearing glasses when I first knew you.
Okay, so then I started getting headaches again, and I realized, okay, well, I'm getting old or something, and I'm going to have to wear glasses. So now you can see that I have these glasses that have really no frames on them. And that's a lot better for me in terms of, you know, not being heavy on my face and not providing a little frame for my vision. So I guess I have to say that for me personally, glasses... And these very specific kind of glasses, if I have to wear glasses for the rest of my life, I hope they can be like this, very light, no frame, just, these little things for my ears or whatever. And so that's my answer. But now you wear glasses, and I don't know if you've ever tried contacts or considered LASIK.
Well, here's the thing. She doesn't specify the context. If it's to say, hold my drink... much prefer glasses. Because contacts just hold a tiny bit, yeah, and it's not very sturdy.
Sure.
I don't even think LASIK would hold any liquid.
That's right.
Assuming we're talking about a vision thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Spectacles, I think, yeah.
Yeah. I prefer all three at once. I get the LASIK, and then I put in the contacts, and I wear my glasses.
Which doesn't make any sense. Seriously, yeah, though, you wear glasses, so is that...
Well...
Do you not... Have you never tried...
I own some contacts.
Oh, you do own some.
I have worn contacts many, many times, and pretty regularly for quite a while. I pretty much just do glasses now. Now out of habit, but the habit was formed, I think, out of laziness.
Hmm.
Contacts were just more work in the morning and stuff like that, and it's easier to irritate them than glasses, you know.
Did you like them though, or did they bother?
Yeah,
you?
No, I like them a lot.
Oh yeah,
and I still do them if I'm like when I used to do LARP, I would wear my contacts.
Oh yeah, right.
Like my contacts are a couple of iterations old on my prescription. My prescription is very bad. I'm fairly certain I'm legally blind without my glasses.
Hmm.
I've known very few people who have as bad eyesight as I do.
I don't think I even have a restriction on my driver's license or anything.
Oh, I taking them off, I would not recognize you from this distance.
Wow.
Not remotely.
Which is about 5 feet.
Less than that even, yeah. I think. Yeah, no. I'll tell you this. I can't tell you're wearing glasses now. It looks like you have a beard.
I do have a slight beard.
Your
right
hair looks a different color. Actually, that's just weird. No. One person who does have vision about as bad as mine is the producer. Unfortunately, we cannot trade off glasses because I have astigmatism in one eye. She has astigmatism in one eye. They're the opposite eyes. It's really annoying. Don't ask why we want to trade glasses. It's a sex thing. It's nobody's business.
Yeah, really.
But it doesn't work. Anyway, I've been thinking LASIK because here's the thing. LASIK first happened. I'm like, awesome. But it's kind of a new thing.
Let's wait for someone else to get their eyeballs burned out.
Exactly, exactly. Wait till they've done it for a while. Wait till it's more common. Wait till it's cheaper. Wait till, you know, they've worked out the kinks. And that was just sort of my mindset. And it was only in the last couple years that I was like, it's been a while.
Mm.
They've done it a lot. It's not that expensive anymore. Lots of people get it.
And they seem to be happy with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and you aren't hearing any horror stories or anything. I mean, except in horror movies.
So are you going to do it then? Or?
Possibly.
No,
I don't know. It's still enough of an expense that I'm pretty sure health insurance won't cover that, yeah, it's probably down the road or whatever, but I could see it as a possibility.
No way. Freaks me out. I just can't do it. Eyeball stuff freaks me out. You're like... You know, in movies where they do the whole knife, like, just
right in
front of someone's eyeball. You know, they're doing that to freak people out, and I don't know if it works on anybody else, but it works on me.
That was my favorite game, because when I would have my contacts in, I could poke myself in the eyeball.
No. Stop talking about it.
And I would do it to people who I know would freak out.
No. Stop talking about it.
Just specifically for that purpose.
Just stop talking
about it. I'm not talking about what I'm doing anymore.
See, my eyes are even closed
now. I'm not talking about what I'm doing anymore. I'm just saying, that thing that we're not talking about, I used to do just to freak out people who are like you.
Well, and it would have, because I think that's terrible.
It's fun.
No, it's not fun.
All right. Poking yourself in the eye when you don't have contacts sucks. I'm just saying.
Would you stop talking about that?
Very bad.
Can we draw something else? We answered this question.
So, the Avengers. All right. Careful. Don't get a question in the eye. It's all fun and games.
Craig asks, what is the best way to deal with insomnia?
Okay, you take your eyeball and then a screwdriver. best way to deal with insomnia. Sleep. Go to sleep.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
I mean, what?
It's yeah. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Presuming you can't, and therefore, you know, have insomnia.
I will tell you the absolute best method of dealing with insomnia. I have a patent on this.
No, you don't.
I know, but I need to get one because it's my thing. The producer can attest to this. You have me tell you the story of the first time I filed taxes in Iowa.
That'll wear you out, huh?
That will put you to sleep. Literally, we have used this multiple times on the producer. It is it is a long story. It is a convoluted story. And it never goes anywhere. Like, early on, when you're still awake, everyone, you're like, oh, maybe something. No, nothing happened. No, it's an amazing story. And it was difficult to live through because it took so long and nothing happened. It's a powerful sleep agent.
Well, the experts would tell you that one thing that you shouldn't do is just toss and turn. No point just lying there. It's good, more than
20 or 30 minutes, I think, at that point. You got to get up.
You got to do something. They recommend you don't do something on the computer because the light from your screen is going to trick your body into thinking, you know, it's daylight or something, so you don't want to do that. But reading a book or doing something in low light or something that's not going to wake you up more can often...
not for too long.
Yeah, give you some sense of fatigue and then you go to sleep.
20, 30 minutes. I know lots of things that can help prevent you from getting insomnia in the first place.
Like what?
Don't eat too soon before bed, or at least don't eat a lot too soon before bed.
Yeah.
Stop your caffeine. I'm discovering this one recently.
Don't drink too much before bed.
I am stopping my caffeine intake most days by about 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing a big difference.
Right, right, right.
Don't, and I break this one all the time, if you read before bed, don't read in bed. Don't do anything in bed before you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Don't watch TV or get on the computer right before you go to bed.
Right, right.
Reading or something else.
For even an hour beforehand, you really shouldn't do it.
Those are all helpful. Supposedly don't drink alcohol or things like that. Those ones are tricky. Alcohol will help you get to sleep, but it totally screws up your sleep cycle. So you will end up much worse rested than you would if you did not do
there,
that.
There are some other health things that are related to insomnia that people don't think about. So, you know, you might want to look, if someone's suffering from chronic insomnia, they might want to look at their diet or not just when they eat and when they drink too close to bedtime, but there might be some things in their diet that are contributing to this. Or also you might not be getting enough exercise. There's a lot
since
of
I've been going to the gym, I sleep a lot better lately.
You want to make sure you're well hydrated during the day. You don't want to drink things too close to bedtime because you're liable to get up in the middle of the night. But if you're well hydrated earlier in the day, sometimes that helps. Now, here's the thing, though, about me and insomnia is I know all these things and I do all these things, but I often get insomnia anyway because some insomnia is stress-induced, and there's not a whole lot you can do about that unless there's some specific way you're not coping with the stress in a healthy manner. Maybe you need to see a therapist or whatever. But sometimes, you know, like the death of a loved one or whatever, it just has to pass, and you're going to maybe have bouts of insomnia for a while.
And some people have slightly different cycles. the producer read a thing talking about, actually, if you go back a couple centuries, I think, if you go back far enough that you don't have electric lights, sleep patterns were much more common to go to bed sort of late evening, wake up again around midnight, 1 a.m., and actually do stuff for a couple hours, and then go back to bed and then sleep until morning when you get up and start your day. That was a much more common thing, and I know some people who are kind of like that. I will say, I have, it happens, especially since I'm going to the gym, it happens less, but I used to, especially with the back pain and stuff like that, frequently wake up in the middle of the night. And I had a method to help me get back to sleep that was pretty effective. William's not going to like it. Masturbation. I'm serious. Quite effective. A little bit of physical activity tires you out. It's handy, so to speak. So you can give that one a try. Hey, this is your own issues here, dude. I'm being very serious about this.
It's my own issues.
Yes.
This is.
I'm saying this is a legitimate, for real.
I know, method. But.
I'm even using the proper terms.
Yes, yes, that's not the point.
You're just...
You don't understand it, do you?
I do, I just like to fuck with it.
I don't think you do understand it. Because you make it sound like it's some kind of prudishness or something, but it isn't. It's just...
It's a kind of prudishness.
No, it isn't.
I think it is.
No, it's not.
I do.
This is how it starts. It starts with... I mean, because first of all, we're talking about sex. And I realize we're not talking about sex where two people are involved in what you just were talking about. But
that is true.
But we start with a situation where it's sex where two people are involved. And you don't talk about it, not because it's sex or it's dirty or whatever, but because you have to show respect to the person not present. But see, then it evolves into this notion that sex is something, you know, sort of sacred, if you will. And so it's just not something you bring up in polite conversation. And so then it just broadly comes out into something that it's... Like I say, it's just not something you bring up in a polite conversation, and it's not that sex is dirty or bad or that any of these things are forbidden or it's not about prudishness at all.
But see, that's the thing.
It's just about being polite.
This viewpoint, I believe, is a form of prudishness.
How?
Because I believe the definition of prudishness involves the need to limit sexual expression, which would include talking about sex casual conversation.
But talking about sex in a casual conversation is sexual expression?
Of a sort. We are expressing things about sex.
About the subject of sex.
Yes.
But we're not expressing sexual... We're not being sexual.
I think
sex as a topic.
Very debatable.
Okay, well, anyway.
Well, and we absolutely at this point are talking about a wholly semantic argument,
I guess,
about the definition of prudishness.
But back to insomnia.
But we also have had long, active discussions about sex that you were quite heavily involved in.
Yes.
The issue involves as soon as it becomes personified.
It's personal. Mm. Not personified, personal. Like, we're talking about someone's personal sexual habits or whatever. And yes, that's when it crosses over into the realm of non-polite conversation. Now, that's a cultural thing. I mean, that's the culture I was raised in. But what I'm insisting is that in this cultural tradition where you don't talk about these things, it's not because the people in my culture have a problem with sex or that they're sexually repressed or anything like that, because that's not even close to being true. It's just something... It's like a lot of... in the culture I was raised in, there's a lot of things you don't talk about in polite conversation. It's not because you're repressing anything. You don't talk about politics. You don't talk about religion either, unless you're pretty certain that the person you're talking to is going to be comfortable with that on some level, or maybe has the same views you do. But if you're not sure about that, or if you're sure that they don't, you don't bring it up, because it's just going to be a fight about opinions.
But I would maintain...
So it's the same kind of thing.
In a given situation, you have a person across from you, pretty much across the board, if somebody says you have to talk to them about two of the following: religion, politics, sex. I'm willing to bet essentially every single time you're going to say, okay, I'll talk to them about politics, I'll talk to them about religion.
Yes, but only because sex is very often going to involve talking about somebody else, which I don't feel like I'm privileged to do, where I can talk about religion or politics without violating some confidence that I have with somebody else.
So you're sitting across the way from two married people, and you're given that option. I still think you're going to take
two married people.
From. Yes,
but and I'm not
two
going
partners.
To be. I'm not going to be obliged to talk about my sex life, because that's what I'm saying.
Not necessarily.
Yes, yeah. But not necessarily. You say
okay,
so.
I'll say no. You don't. You're still going to pick politics and religion.
Well,
every time.
Not necessarily. Because I have been in situations where it's been my job or position to actually mediate between two people having a difficulty as a couple.
I believe that. And I don't believe they said, okay, do you want to mediate their religion, their politics, or their sex?
No.
You were sort of stuck where you needed to.
Well, exactly. And
I'm talking about a voluntary situation. These three things, which you were raised to believe, that just aren't talked about unless under the certain circumstances. And you're given the option.
Yeah.
And you have to pick two of the three. Sex is always going to be the one you leave out.
Well, again, as I said, unless it can be guaranteed that I'm not going to have
it is.
To give
I'm
away...
saying this right now. You don't have to talk about your sex life. You have to talk with them about their sexual.
No, there are contexts where I would be okay
like
with
that.
But you're right. I probably would pick religion or politics first.
No, but you have to pick two.
Yeah, I would probably.
Pick both
I probably would. That's true. But in the situation you're describing, where I'm not going to have to talk about myself personally, and they're both okay talking about just the two of them or whatever, I don't think I would have that big a problem with it. But I do think you're right. I would rather.
And why is that? That's the heart of it right there. Why would you prefer politics and religion?
Well, because even
your upbringing thing doesn't explain that.
Well, because even though they're talking about only each other and they're obviously both okay with it, it still feels wrong, you know, because it just seems like, again, it just seems like that's not something two people should talk about.
But why more so than about their religion or their politics?
Because, again, there's someone else involved. And just because they're both there and they're both giving permission, it's still, they're talking about something that seems like, it's really not that much different if it was a doctor and the patient, and they're both telling me about this person's medical history and details about they're both there. They both say it's okay for them to do it, or even here's even better: a priest and a confessor, and the confessor and the priest, they're both talking about what's been talked about in confessional. That would make me very uncomfortable, even if they're both there and they're agreeing that they want to do that, because it seems like there's some higher standard that they're violating that you don't exempt yourself from just by deciding, well, okay, the two of us are here, so it's okay. Like, that doesn't make it okay. And I there's some sacred trust or some sacred thing there that needs to be honored in principle. And that it's really not just a matter of personal choice. And, oh, well, we're both here, so we can override this. It doesn't matter. It's hard to
yeah,
describe.
No, at this point, I think you're making an argument of faith at this point. So
but it's not really.
You have a personally held belief of sex that doesn't, I don't think, have any rational or logical or logistical explanation.
No,
it's
right.
Just,
that's right.
It's just from the heart, as it
yeah,
were.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's right. But it's not... But it's not because it's sex. It's because it belongs to a category of things like the priest and the confessor that you just feel funny being in on, even if those people are okay with it.
Yeah, see, I think you should use the first person when you say that, not you feel funny being on.
Well, I do, yes. Yeah. But I'm sure I'm not the only person like that, but that's what I mean, me, yes. Does it make any sense? It belongs to a category, is what I'm saying.
I understand the logistics of it. Yeah, I don't relate to it.
Okay, but what all of this comes back to is this notion that I'm not being prudish. It's a whole different thing.
And again, that's semantic. I don't know the exact definition of prudishness.
Well, I suppose that,
but
maybe
my reaction to this feeling is similar to the reaction I have to people who have.
Well, I know that's right.
Feelings.
Which that's and that's it bothers.
And
me.
I don't think it's a lack of understanding of where you're coming from.
Well,
I just honestly
because
have similar
because
feelings.
When I think of a prudish
because I have very different feelings. About
because
sex.
When I think of a prudish person, I think and incidentally, I don't have a problem with, you know, how you think about things and approach things. And I'm not saying that I would never tell you that you shouldn't talk about these things. But
well,
of course,
you would hear. But
well, but yes, but I'm going to respond the way I respond. I totally respect you.
You're not telling me I shouldn't be talking about sex with other people when you're not around.
Well, or even on here. I mean, but I'm going to react the way I react. I mean,
yeah, you
have a right to say it. I have a right to react to it. And I would never presume to tell you how what you should do or say. So that's not what this is about. I'm just trying to... A lot of people who know me, you know, they see this tendency in me and they think that I'm prudish. But see, to me, a prude is someone who is sexually repressed, which I don't think I am, is someone who, even in appropriate sexual situations, can sometimes be frustrated and not know what to do or not know how to act. And that doesn't apply to me. Even in situations where the circumstances should meet their criteria for healthy sexual interaction, somehow struggle with it. And that's never been the case for me. I've never had a problem.
You're talking about issues of sexual dysfunction, sexual frustration,
and
sexual negativity.
Yeah.
And you hold none of those. I would agree with that.
So to me, when I think of not talking about personal sexual activity or habits or whatever in the public space, it belongs to a whole category of things, and it has nothing to do with the fact that it's sex is, you know, has nothing to do with it. I think the reason people think that I'm prudish is because of the sex element of it. Like the reason I don't want to talk about it is because it's sex and I have a problem with sex, but that's not true.
I think you have worked too long. You have begun to conflate your definitions with regard to sex in this capacity with your defense of people feeling that way about you. Don't mix the two up because it muddies the definition. Your position is a clear one when you explain it correctly. When you spend too much time trying to say, but I'm not a prude at the same time, which I get because you've gotten that reaction a lot, it muddies your defining. It's a little bit like when the transcendental meditationists try to explain how legitimate they are. And consequently, it gets harder to understand what it is they're claiming is legitimate.
Yes, yes, yes.
I can understand why that you would have that reaction from people and why that would bother you and why you would feel that is not accurate. And I do not feel that way.
Well, you know, this makes me think of something else that I've always had a real problem with that's related. Mm-hmm. And that is, or it seems related. I think it's related. Maybe it isn't. But I perceive it as being related. When I was younger and, you know, dating, I discovered that at least where I was, and now you can tell me if this was true where you grew up or if you think this is true generally, because I don't claim to know what the general, cultural consensus on this is, but it seemed like women, that the nicer I was and the more gentlemanly and respectful I was, which is how I was raised to be in romantic, or amorous situations, the less interested the woman was in me in general. And also, they seemed, a lot of the women I knew seemed to be more interested in men who were, in a way that I regarded as being less respectful and seemed to be more obviously interested, not just in sex, but like almost like only sex.
Yeah.
And eventually I still...
The bad boy.
Kind of, I guess, yeah. And so it took me a long time to work out what was going on here, but it seemed to be, what I seemed to be observing was that These young women had been trained from very young, I suppose, to think that sexual advances are a way that you know a guy is interested in you. And if he isn't making sexual advances, well, then he must not be that into you, and so you should move on to somebody else.
I think this is a stereotype that has been around forever. I can't claim the validity of it. I seem to have run into the same thing, but I'm not going to go ahead and say that this is a general truth. I believe, insofar as it may be true, there's a few things at work here. One, I think, is that concept, that belief. And that's a belief that I think can be on both sides. I came to terms in late college with the realization that I had certain sexual obsessions because in my mind I equated that with emotional feelings. And if someone would let me have sex with them, it meant they liked me. And if they didn't, then they didn't like me. And if my significant other at the time and I weren't having sex, it meant we weren't getting along well. And if we were having sex, it meant we were getting along well, regardless of the rest.
Wow.
So I think there is some of that there. There's also issues of self-image and self-worth. If you have self-image issues, it is very easy to find yourself attracted to, sexually and otherwise, to the people who don't seem to put a lot of value in you, because clearly they have better shit going on.
Mm.
Somebody spending a lot of time with you and for you, and you know you're worthless, then what does that say about them?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And of course the whole taboo factor, the forbidden thing. The person you know you shouldn't be with is tempting.
I don't understand that at all.
That's a very tricky one for William, but most people I think would understand that one.
Yeah, I don't.
I looked through that one a lot.
But
this, no, that you are not alone in experiencing that phenomenon to this day.
Okay, so going off of that, this idea that
and the logic is always supposed to be that they will sleep with the other one and date them, but eventually they'll marry you.
Right, but there's another irony here. Sometimes I think these young women and maybe even older women have the idea. And I don't know if this works for men or not, because, you know, I've never dated men. So, the man who's more sexually forward is more virile, perhaps, and a better lover than the one who is more reserved and is willing to let the woman kind of lead in the physical aspect of the relationship. Which, my thinking, I think that's logically backwards. I mean, not to oversimplify, because there's probably exceptions to all these rules, but it seems to me that a person who's overeager and acts like all they're interested in sex might not be a very sensitive, you know, and caring lover, and they're actually going to be horrible in bed. And the one who's willing to take time and let the woman lead might actually be a very disciplined and very caring and attentive lover. So that the exact opposite is true of what is concluded.
I don't tend to believe either sets, largely because I don't believe the validity of your axis. But
what do you mean?
I think that's good. I don't think that the eager one and the caring one, or the horny one versus the sensitive one, or the indiscriminate one versus the attentive one, is a good continuum.
Well, no, I don't either. I just I'm saying that I think that's what's perceived by perhaps younger women in their interest in these men over these men, is that, oh, well, these guys are more sexually interested, so not only does this indicate that they're into me and this guy isn't.
I do agree that I think that is a perspective out there, and I do not think it is correct.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
The flip side you were attempting to explain, I do not agree with either.
No, all I mean by the flip side is that is equally logical. You see what I'm saying? Is it's equally, you could equally say logically that the sensitive guy is going to be likely a better lover than the other person. And I'm not saying it's always that true,
no,
or that it's valid.
You have the eager, sensitive guy also.
No, I know that. I am not making my point very well. I'm just trying to say
that... I think you're expanding your point outside of its scope. I do agree with you that concept, I do believe, is not an accurate line of thought.
But it's a popular line of thought, though. Do you think?
I think it's on a sort of subconscious level, possibly.
Well, and my point is that there isn't a compelling logic there.
No.
Because you could totally reverse the logic and come to the same conclusion the other direction and even be right.
God, we're just getting to the same point as usual. People are stupid. People do not sit down and rationally work out who's going to be most attractive. People are raised in the hegemony, and then they're stuck with those ideas, and it takes years of therapy and introspection to get out of them.
But these ideas are, I mean, it comes from, you know, there's a certain, it comes from a very specific place, though. I mean, you know, the whole male dominance aspect of our culture, that's kind of what's driving this, don't you think?
I would agree, yes.
And it's to the detriment of everybody, really.
Absolutely.
But, of course, women seem to suffer more than men.
Yes.
And, but, you know, I just remember the way it related to the whole prude thing, you know, it's like, well, here I am, and I'm raised to be very respectful and do all this stuff, and it's okay with me, that's the way I want to be. But, you know, it seems like where I would expect a woman to appreciate it and respond to it in a positive way, they respond to it the exact opposite way, and they're interested in these guys who are very disrespectful, who are only interested in one thing, are definitely not going to be long-term relationships with them. And here's something else that I heard much later as I was growing up, because one friend of mine has said that any guy who tells you his first sexual experience was, you know, not a total disaster is lying.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what he's trying to say is that...
I think mine was okay. Well... First sexual experience is a broad term, but when I officially lost my virginity, I think it went pretty well.
Well, but see, again, he would say you're lying. Because his position is that the first sexual experience that most American males have is, you know, when they're 16 or whatever, and all they're thinking about is themselves, and they couldn't possibly get it right. I just don't think that's true. I think that's absolutely false.
I think that
false.
Is very common. Most first sexual experience stories I've heard are like that. But again, I think that's built out of the social
stigma. Not to get personal about it, but I'm just going to tell you that's not true.
I gathered that wasn't true for you.
Not true.
But again, you're William. And I'm telling you, how many first sexual encounter stories have you heard?
Well, I mean, you know me. Most people won't tell me because they
know. Exactly. I have heard many, and I'm telling you, the vast majority of them were kind of disasters. My second one was a disaster. So it's a whole other thing. And again, psychological issues. And it's not because people are bad. It's despite, you're talking about all the stuff that are built into the socialization of women. There's a ton of stuff that's built in the socialization of men. And it can make that experience very awkward and very unnerving and a problem.
Well, but doesn't that speak to a deep, deep problem in our whole culture?
Absolutely. And it's one that is not new, and it is one that we already knew. I mean, yes, that's true. Congratulations. You've uncovered that racism is bad. I mean, like, what?
No, I know, but it's just, it amazes me that something can be so pervasive. Everybody talks about it. They make fun of it on whatever. Everybody hates it. Well, then why doesn't everybody do something about it?
Because nobody knows how to affect a systemic cultural change.
Sure they do. They have children. They say, wow, I don't want my kids to have the same experience I do, so you raise them differently.
That. They're trying.
No, they're not. They're not doing anything different.
Oh, God, yes. Tons
how?
Of parents are trying to do sex positive. They're trying to raise gender neutral kids. They're trying to have frank and open discussions that are going very poorly for a lot of them.
Right,
that's why every generation has all sorts of new parenting fads, because they are trying. They're just not very good at it, and it largely has to do with a lack of self-knowledge.
I mean, think about how absurd that sounds, lack of self-knowledge. Like, what in the entire universe should you have knowledge about besides yourself?
People are stupid.
Granted, it's also where you're going to have your biggest blind spots,
yes,
because there's a feedback loop or whatever. But also, you shouldn't know anything better than yourself.
I will maintain
blind spots included.
Till my dying day that you have got some serious gaps.
No, I know I do. Of course I do. Everybody does.
But
even considering those natural blind spots,
that are specific to individuals. I think you've got blind spots that I don't necessarily have, or that other people don't.
But there's a certain level of lack of self-knowledge that is, you know, obviously pathological. And and when you have a culture that seems to be trying to create people who are like that for its own purposes, because people with those pathologies make good employees, good consumers, good obedient voters, you know. And I mean, not that there's some conspiracy or anything, because there doesn't have to be. It's just you get enough people who want the same thing and everything gets synchronized. That's how the universe works. But it doesn't have to be like that. And a lot of enough people are unhappy with it that if they came together, I read somewhere that a third of the electorate didn't even vote, or what they projected weren't going to vote. And I think that's how it turned out. So, and I'm not saying that voting in federal elections changes anything, because I don't think it does. But it's just an example of how you have large blocks of people who, if they decided all at once to do something, they could actually change something. And so, but why don't they? I mean, is it just they don't think that it's going to amount to anything, or they don't realize it? Or
it's a combination of things. Sometimes it's the belief they can't. Sometimes it's what I always term laziness. But if you feel you're comfortable in your position, you aren't going to work that hard to do anything.
Now, see, that's an interesting thing you say there, because I think that's exactly what a lot of you know, the powers that be, if I can use that terminology, sorry, Blood Sparrow. Because when I talk about the powers that be in this context, I'm not talking about, again, people who are getting together in a little room somewhere. I'm talking about the people who most benefit from the status quo.
Okay. Before you develop this tangent of a tangent of a tangent too far and then get back to your tangent of a tangent point, we are at like an hour 16. So maybe don't define the powers that be so much and get to your point.
I don't remember what comfort was going to be.
Comfort.
Okay. But the powers that be sort of, at least unconsciously, manipulate that idea of comfort.
Oh, absolutely.
Because what you're comfortable with today, that means that you might be comfortable with even a little less or more, whatever the case may be,
absolutely,
tomorrow. And so it pushes it, pushes it, pushes it until people are comfortable with something that's nightmarish. I mean, they think 20 years ago it was nightmarish, but now they don't, because absolutely, they've been eased into it.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of frightening, don't you think? I mean,
to
realize that process is underway and we could end up in some... But of course, I guess one could argue that, yes, William, it's nightmarish to you, but at that time, if it's not nightmarish to the people in it, then is it really nightmarish? I guess maybe it isn't. You know, it's a dystopia to us.
As a significantly anesthetized member of the general public, I can tell you it's nightmarish when I think about it. I don't think about it much.
Well,
I had another fascinating axis about sex, actually, and the interdependence of the opposing positions. People who tend to treat sex more from the sacred versus those who don't, and issues of curiosity and envy in both directions that I've been hearing on certain podcasts recently, and they've been discussing this concept of people who, the way they put it is, people who are fuck people and people who aren't fuck people, which is to say people who will not make love will fuck, will find people that they want to have sex with and have sex with them and say, that was nice, see you later, and just do that however they want, versus people for whom it always must be a fairly significant aspect of the relationship. And perspective from both sides and how they view the other side and how both in certain ways kind of envy aspects of the other side. And I thought it was very interesting, but we are so far over time, I don't feel like I can get into it right now. What I will tell you, people, find a podcast called You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes. It's a great podcast. I only discovered it recently. And one of the early episodes is with, I believe it's episode 4 or 5 or something. Guest name is Moshe Kasher. Check that out. Talks about just what I was talking about here, and I find it very interesting. Also, it's a great podcast and they're hilarious.
Okay,
so check that out.
Thank you, Craig, Kia B, and Mark. Give those to you.
Thank you, guys. Tell us what you thought about this. Explain sex to William. On the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Actually, don't bother to define prude for us. I can think of at least three listeners, one of whom will definitely cover it and post it on the blog. But the rest of you can go look what the definition is when they post it. Write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Like the hat on Facebook, The Magical Talking Hat. Go find it. Like it. It's wonderful. And follow me on Twitter at NotQuiteTony. I'm hilarious. I really am hilarious. And I'm putting this out here because I did not know it was a big deal, but I got more activity on this tweet than I have like on anything. I sometimes have been known to talk about yoga pants on Twitter.
Wow.
And apparently the public loves that, so go check that out. Add Not Quite Tony. Otherwise, we're going to have to record two episodes next week to prepare for the Giving of Thanks. Our second annual Turkey Day parade, or I don't even remember. But yes. So, we'll see you back here then. All right?
Next week.
All right.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.